Hi, everyone. This is your co-host, Stu, and I'm here with the paranormalist, Patty Wilson. Hi, Patty. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I am doing very well. It looks nice outside, but it's chilly. But
it is windy.
It's not snowing. And in my whole life, I've never had to shovel sunshine, so
yep.
I'm happy.
I'm good with that, too, I have to confess. We actually cooked on the grill this evening.
I did that yesterday. Yeah, Mrs. Stu wanted some steaks, and we did some steaks, and they were just fantastic. It's been a while, so. If you are new to the channel, to the podcast, we thank you for joining us. If you would be so kind as to click like and subscribe. And if you are returning, welcome back. We'd like to thank you for staying with us. And we apologize for missing last week, but every so often, you know, life does happen, folks. So it does. And I think by way of announcements, that's about all I have. So what's our topic?
Haunted highways.
The gears are turning. Just thinking, you know, like, okay, yeah, which ones have I heard of? Which ones have I not heard of? So.
So I tried to pick ones that were not like really well known, because, like, you know, there are certain highways that we know a lot. There's a couple that I thought were really interesting that maybe people have heard a little bit about, but they haven't heard the whole story. But I there are just so many stories, both from, you know, regular folks and truck drivers and what have you, that I have this amazing story. And the last story was kind of ironic that I found it. I found it a week ago. So it predates what's current events. But now it'll all make sense to you if you stick to the end, guys. So let's just get started. So one of the places that that I found a really amazing story for was Des Moines, Iowa. So in Des Moines, Iowa, in the 1600s, there were these Trappist monks who settled in the area, and that area now hosts Interstate 80. So for those who live in that area, we're talking about Interstate 80. There are some legends that came out of that time period. So the area was settled by the French trappers who, you know, were there for the fur trade. Just to give you a little back story, and there were a lot of Native Americans, there were a lot of other Europeans that settled in the area. I know 1600 sounds exceedingly early, but believe it or not, American history starts a lot earlier than a lot of our history books tell us. So there were people going in there in the 1600s to trap and to settle and what have you. So this is the story that has its roots in that time frame. There have been stories for literally ever about a walking spirit that walks a part of the Interstate 80 in an area called Mitchellville, which is a few miles, I think, northeast or due east of Des Moines. This apparition looks like a frontiersman with the long hair, the beard, the dress, the clothing, a whole nine yards. And he seems to be looking for something or someone. He is just seen walking along. He kind of looks in the distance. He's looking around like he's trying to figure something out. And there have been dozens and dozens and dozens of people who have seen him. He's seen on that little stretch from Mitchellville to Des Moines. He's walks right across the interstate, right in front of people. You can imagine how weird it would be to be driving along and see a colonially dressed man, you know, from the French and Indian period, walking across the road in front of you, pausing in the middle of the highway, and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to hit him. And then he's just gone. There's a story that kind of illustrates that I'd like to share. This story comes from back in 1998. It was about a woman who was on her way home from a basketball game in Des Moines. She and her husband had gone to the game, and they're driving home. They had not been imbibing anything. They were literally just hanging out at a local basketball game when they saw a man in frontiersman clothing on I-80. Now, it was in the middle of it was late in the evening. It was like 11 o'clock-ish, you know, at night. They couldn't see his face, but they noticed that he had a faint glow. That's what caught her attention. She was the driver. And so she sees this figure, and he's got this very faint glow as he's stepping out onto the highway. As they got closer, She's slowing down and she flicks her headlights on better, on bright, despite cars, you know, being in front of her and coming the other direction, because she needs to let him know she's there. Like, what are you doing? And she gets a better look at him. She said that's when he turned and looked at the car and suddenly just disappeared right in front of them. And she said to her husband, did you see that? And he's like, oh my gosh, yes. So over the course of time, you know, they share this story with people, you know, parties and family gatherings, things like that. And they find out that this figure is actually known to have haunted this area for as far back as you can get in the newspapers, 100, 150 years. And I'm sure there were encounters previously to that, but they just didn't make it into a written document that we can trace. So, and there are lots of people over the course of time that came forward and have come forward in newspapers and different interviews and what have you, and talked about having seen this gentleman or somebody that very well could be this gentleman. Let's just leave it at that. So, now the next story.
I was going to say that starts at Interstate 80. I have been over 3 times in my entire life. Yeah, so only 3 times, so the chances of me seeing this particular person was probably pretty low.
Yeah, probably. Well, you never know. Mm-hmm. You know, crazy things that happen. But I just thought it was a really interesting story because it's so random.
I mean, are people still seeing this
effort? Yeah, I mean, up through the last story I found, and I just did a cursory look, to be fair about it, was around 2000-ish. So I'm sure that, you know, it's still got a good opportunity to be active.
It makes you wonder, too, the number of people who may have seen and just said, yeah, I'm not gonna identify myself as somebody who's seen this. I'm just going to keep that with me for a while.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think that's the probability is that 90-some% of the people do exactly that. How many people want to be the guy who says, you know, says this, or they tell their family and friends a little bit, and then their family rolls their eyes and goes, yeah, right. What were you drinking on the way home? So, yeah. And I think it's that way with a lot of the ghost stories, because it's easier to let it go. It's just, you know, you don't have to get poked at by people. I know a young man who saw the broad top snake, which is something we talked about in another podcast a long time ago. And he told me, I asked him once, I said, did you really see it? And he said, Patty, the amount of harassment, name calling, belittling I've taken for this has been almost endless. And if I'd have known, I'd have kept my mouth shut. So I think it's that way with ghost stories and all that stuff, that we don't tell those stories as often. It's not as weird today, like you don't get treated as badly today, but there's still a lot of people that would poo-poo you. So our next place is Mount Misery and Sleepy Hollow Road. Now, anybody who watches the podcast often knows I have a real thing about the Headless Horseman and Sleepy Hollow. I've always enjoyed that. But this is about, there's a piece of road. It has a really bizarre amount of ghost stories and legends attached to it. The areas around a place called Melville and Huntington's Mount Misery, and a little road called Sweet Hollow Road. So it's like just a little area about a mile and a half, 2 miles wide long. Not a very large piece of ground at all. And the stories are just insane. Among the stories are phantom horses riding out of the darkness and directly into the path of a car, sometimes even directly at the car. The driver panics, you know, hits the brakes, and then the car disappears just as it's about to hit, or the horse disappears just as it's about to hit the car. Or they drive through it, but there's no substance to the horse. And if that were all there was, that would just be interesting and unusual, but there's a lot more to this. The area's got a lot of history. It was, you know, well settled early on by Native Americans. And in the 1600s, the Europeans began coming there. And one of the legends is that there was a hospital that was built there in the mid-1700s, which is American Revolutionary time. And the patients and staff were trapped inside when there was a fire and succumbed. And they say that people hear screaming as though they're reliving the event. There's another version of it where there's a woman, she's dressed like a nurse from the early 1800s, and she's seen in the woods. Sometimes she's seen in the woods with a group of small children who are marching along behind her. And I often wondered if they're saying nurse and they might mean a nun or something, because, you know, there were a lot of nuns who like ran orphanages and stuff. And the reason this is fascinating to me is because all the children have no faces.
That just creeps me out.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very creepy idea that, you know, you see this woman dressed as a nun or a nurse or something from that time period, and marching behind her are these children, and you go to look at the children and they have no faces.
Almost an allegory, you know, to the, you hear the quote, the faceless children.
Yeah. So, there's another legend of a mass suicide. Supposedly several teenagers got together and made a suicide pact and hung themselves on the Northern State Parkway overpass. People have claimed to have seen them hanging there. There's a local, and it is a legend. It's that, you know, if you honk your horns and flash your lights three times, you'll see the bodies hanging there, kind of a deal. But, you know, it's a story that's been told for quite a long time. There's a shadowy figure of a woman in white, and some people say she comes from the hospital fire. Others say that she was a suicide along that road. Some say she was a girl named Mary. There's a story about a place called Mary's Grave, and that Mary was hit by a car, and that she is buried nearby in a cemetery, and that she leaves her grave and comes out and walks along the road as though she's still trying to get home. So if you're looking for the legend of Mary's Grave, that would be what you would be looking for if you're looking to go into details on that story. There's a gypsy woman dressed in flamboyant clothing who appears out of nowhere, and she'll be on the hill or along the road and walking trails that are right up, that come along the edge of the road. And there's stories of her being seen many times by drivers. They're driving along, you're just driving along, it's sort of scenery, and you're looking and you see this very out of place, what looks like a gypsy, walking along, and then as you're watching her, she just fades away. Another one that is really interesting is that there is supposed to be a police officer who's seen along the road, and he's walking along the road as though he's headed somewhere with great purpose. If you come at him from the front, he just looks like a police officer in a uniform. If you come at him from the back, you get why this is a really frightening experience. The back of his head is blown out.
Oh.
So whatever it is. But I mean, this is a lot of stuff in one little mile and a half, 2 mile area. And then a police detective did confirm this last story, that there was a body of a child found in 1976, and drivers by have stopped because they've seen a small child, a small boy, and he's in the middle of nowhere, you know, 5 or 6 year old boy in the middle of nowhere, and they stop their car and ask if he's okay, and he just looks at them mutely and then fades away. That is a lot of paranormal activity in a small space.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, and I have to tell you, I kind of got a feeling for what it's like to be driving along and have something like that happen. I told a story a long time ago about a friend of mine and I driving in Cambria County, and like she's driving from one little town to the other, and I'm sitting in the passenger seat, and all of a sudden I jump forward and I go, you know, and I grab the dash, and she's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, there was a boy on a bicycle, like a young man, an adult man, but young, on a bicycle. And she looked at me funny and she said, oh my gosh, she knows a lot of the police and stuff in town because of her job. She's like, we had a police officer tell me just a couple months ago about the fact that he had, that people were telling them that they were seeing this young man, and he knew exactly who it was because there was a boy who was hit on the bike, a young man in his late teens, hit on a bike at that very spot where I saw him. And he was riding along, going way too fast, took that curve, took it on the wrong side, and somebody hit him. And people, like, there were periods of time when he gets really quiet and nobody sees him for a long, long time. And then there'll be a period of time that where several people will see them and report it to the police because they think they hit somebody or almost hit somebody on that piece of road. And I saw him. And he came flying out of nowhere, which would have been exactly what would have happened in the real story, on the wrong side of the road, headed right at us. And then he was just not there.
And did...
Yes,
your friend, is it PD? Did she see the bicyclist? Nope. I think when you told that before, I thought you said that she hadn't. But.
Yeah, no, she hadn't seen him. She just saw like the panic on my face because I honestly thought we were going to hit this man. Mm-hmm. He was solid. And it maybe was, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 seconds. Like, you know, you saw something coming at you, realize it's a boy on a bike, and you react, and by then it's gone. So I can understand the being disconcerted. So the next
especially on the road, you know, things come at you pretty quickly, you know, and you don't have a lot of time to react.
Yeah, isn't that like our worst nightmare? I mean, my worst nightmare has always been to hit somebody on the road, you know, like a child come running out of nowhere or something like that. And everybody I know, that's a big fear. We spend a lot of time. If you see kids playing along in their yard and you're driving by, I don't know about other folks, but I slow down just in case. You never know when a kid's going to kick a ball and run after it or something like that. So I'd rather be safe than sorry. So I'll just slow down and go through that area much more slowly than I might have otherwise because there's children out. You never know what they'll do. And I have a good friend that when she was 5, her parents were divorced and she saw her daddy across the street. He was coming to get her. And rather than wait for him to come pick her up, she did exactly that. And she was hit by a car and she was in the hospital for 5 months. And she's, to this day, she has back and joint pain because of it. You know, I mean, it got better for a long time, but now she's getting a little older. Not as old as me, but a little older. And now she's noticing it more. But yeah, she did damage, serious damage.
Yeah.
So, and she said, all I saw was my daddy. I didn't see any of the other stuff. So our next one is probably one folks might have heard of. So it was the infamous Route 666 in New Mexico. So basically what it was a merger of Route 66 with Route 6. So people put it together and made it 666. Well, the local Navajo people that live near there didn't like the connotation of that. They're, you know, very religious, spiritual people, and they thought it brought a lot of bad to the area, and they just didn't want to be known for that. And it was named that for quite a long time. So they eventually rerouted it, I believe in like 2003, they renumbered it, and it's now Route 491. But originally it was called Route 666, and then people would refer to it as the Devil's Highway. It was the other title that it got. So very dark place, but it might have been dark for a lot of other reasons as well, because there's an awful lot of, it's a high fatality stretch of road. Now, granted, you can make some real physical observations. It's a, you know, it's a stretch of road that's got it's dangerous to drive. You can see it's a dangerous area to drive. People drive way too fast. You know, you get out in those long stretches of road and you think, I got this, and you just keep accelerating. But there's been an awful lot of stories, but among the stories are some bizarre stories. There's stories of these hellhounds, these spectral dogs that are literally seen running out of nowhere, and they'll keep pace with the car or a truck and try to tear the tires. They rip the tires apart with their claws and their teeth as the vehicle's going, and the tires will blow out.
Wow, like gremlins in an airplane.
Yeah. Huh. And there have been multiple, over the years, multiple people, different people from different areas, different states, who've had this experience and reported it. The police have, you know, heard the story more times than they would like, and they tell this crazy tale. You know, they have a blowout, and they're parked along the road, and I call 911 or whatever, you know, they need to do to get help, and then they tell this crazy tale about this, these dogs with red eyes, these big monster dogs with great fangs and red eyes that come out of nowhere and like kept pace with them going 50, 60, 70 miles an hour and were easily able to swat and rip at or bite at the tires and blew out one of the tires. And then once they blow out and they spin, you know, and it stops them, then it disappears. Is it trying to kill people? It's a really creepy thought. There's also another one.
Yeah, I was going to say, especially if these things didn't happen before the merger of the roads, and they only happened after a nomenclature change, or even if it's a colloquial change, you know, to 666. That's very, I find that highly interesting.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like there's any stories that go back beyond that, but once that, at one point there was, it was literally Route 666, and there's, you know, road signs and what have you. And there's actually, you can go into like the local town councils and hear the citizens complaining because road signs are being stolen because, you know, young people all wanted to steal the Route 666 signs, you know, things like that. But until then, these stories don't seem to exist. And there's a story about a rig that's on fire. And this actually comes from Commercial Truck Trader. It's an article from one of their magazines. And that it's been seen on fire, just going hell for leather, pardon the pun, down the highway. And, you know, people see this huge rig on fire, flames shooting out of the back of it and all around it as though it's engulfed in flames. And they're pulling off, letting it, you know, go. And calling for help, and there's nothing there. Really something. There's a lot of other really interesting stories. There's a story that I particularly liked. It was a story about a woman who's a traveling nurse, and she had to travel Route 666 for years and years because it was part of her territory, and that was the main way to get from one section of her territory to the other where she would go. And one night she's leaving a patient's home a little late. She has to get home. It's early winter, kind of like November-ish, you know. The moon's full, the wind's howling, it's starting to rain. It's just a miserable night. And she's driving along. It's getting dark, you know, she kicks on her headlights. And she's thinking, you know, about all the stories she's heard of ghosts and skinwalkers and devil dogs and craziness. And she's like, this would be the night. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this car appears in the behind her, way far back. It's a long straight stretch. And she's kind of in her head doing the mental math on how long it's going to take this car to catch up as fast as it appears to be moving. And sure enough, it doesn't take but a second or two, and it's right up behind her. It's tailgating her. She's watching it and thinking, you know, what is wrong with this guy? Why are they, you know, what are they doing? So she's speeds up a little bit, thinking maybe he'll get off her tail if she just goes a little faster. Eventually, she looks down and she realizes she's doing like 90 some miles an hour, which is easy to miss on a road that flat. You know, you don't get that sense of like we don't do that in Pennsylvania because it looks like a mule plowed every highway and it's all twists and turns up and down hills and what have you. And you can't pick up that kind of speed. But she's trying to get away from this guy, and then she realizes it's not going to work. So she decides to slow down real slow, and maybe he'll pass her. There's nothing coming. So as he passes her, she looks over, and she can't see anything. She wanted to see who this person was. It was a young person and an older person, because the windows are darkly tinted. It's in like a Oldsmobile, dark black or dark blue Oldsmobile, four-door. And it's going down the road. She's thinking, man, I've got an 8-cylinder turbocharge. And this thing passed me like pay car passing a bump. So it goes, you know, and she's like, whew, it's done. But then a little further ahead, it's going down the road really super slow. Like it's waiting for her. So now she's getting really nervous because it's like playing a game, whoever this driver is. So she reaches over and she gets her phone and she starts to dial 911 because, you know, she needs help. There's something wrong. And she doesn't have any service in that stretch of highway.
Of course.
Of course. So she decides she'll just pass it. And since it's going so slow, whatever, whoever it is, she'll pass them. And so she passes the person, and as she passes the person, she looks over, and it's completely pitch dark now. The only light is the headlights and, you know, a little bit of moonlight and what have you. And she looks over to her right, and the car window is rolled down, and there's a set of red glowing eyes looking out at her. And the car hits the gas and takes off. Speeds ahead of her, and it just vanishes as though it's swallowed up by the darkness.
Enough to make you turn in your license and just say, I'm done.
Yeah. I would not be a traveling nurse at that point. I'd be finding me a nice solid hospital somewhere. And there are definitely stories of skinwalkers along that section of road. There was a really interesting story about an a skinwalker report. There were Navajo rangers. So the Navajo have their own police force, and they call their police officers rangers. And this was a story told by the Navajo rangers. One of the rangers actually wrote a book about what had happened because it was so insane. And it is a piece of highway right along. It's on Route 666. And there were so many stories of skinwalkers, of dog men, things like that appearing there, that they actually had to go and investigate some of these cases. And then animals started turning up dead on one of the local ranches. There was seven of them in total. And they were attacked by this dog-like bipedal creature, a coyote that was as large as a wolf. Rocks came out of nowhere and pelted the house, pelted the ground, was thrown at them, some of them huge. And interestingly enough, the rangers, there were four rangers who witnessed this in total, and a veterinarian, the people who lived in the house on that ranch, and a couple other people all witnessed this. And one of the rangers, one of these great big boulders were being thrown at them. I don't want to say boulder, maybe that's too large, but they were large enough rocks that a normal man couldn't pick them up and wheel them any distance. And the guy said he touched one of them that landed just a foot or two ahead of him, and it was hot to the touch. And it was in the evening, and it was very cool out and rainy. And yet it was as though it were laying in the hot sun all day. And there were these animals attacked the house. They attacked the rangers. In fact, there's a section where he talks about in the book where he talks about how there were four rangers in the in this truck, and it was attacking the truck so hard it dented the metal of the truck, and they thought it was going to flip the truck over, one of these bipedal dog creatures. It's a fascinating story, and it's right there in the middle of Route 666. And this went on for the entire night. And then in the following morning, it was gone. And there was one of the investigators who was physically bitten by one of these dogs. Like, this is a physical thing. She was bitten, and it ripped her boot off, and she had to go to the hospital for her injuries. It's just a crazy story. I know it sounds nuts, but it's not much different than, Skinwalker Ranch and all those places. It's that crazy combination of things all going on at the same time. And they make the claim that Skinwalker Ranch is unique. And unique is definitely a word I would say for it, you know, with dire wolves that are seen coming out of nowhere and cattle levitated and all kinds of crazy stuff. But it's certainly not the only place.
I'll stay on the East Coast.
Oh, we have our tails too.
Well, I know, but I mean, you've ruined the woods for me. Now you're ruining, you know, Des Moines. You ruined Arizona. What's left?
No, see, these are tourist, you know, things. I'm letting you know these are cool places to go if you want to check this stuff out, man.
Well, the one place I do want to check out is the road in Cambria County.
I'll have to get her to tell you exactly where it was at. She could tell you exactly. In this little town, I think called Dudley or something. But anyway, she could definitely give you directions.
Okay.
So I'm going to talk about a place called in Allentown, Pennsylvania. There's a diner down there. It's a little 24-hour diner. It kind of caters to truck drivers and people that work odd hours and need to go grab a meal, that kind of thing. And there's a story from a person who had been at the diner. And basically, they said that one night they were having dinner in the diner. They got to talking with the waitress. It was kind of a slow night about the place. It had a funny feel about it. And they asked if there were any stories about the place. And the lady said, oh, yeah, there's tons of stories, the waitress. They say this place was built over an Indian burial ground. And, of course, every place is built over an Indian burial ground. So, you know, he didn't think a whole lot about it. And then she said there's been several pedestrians killed out front of the diner. It's a busy area where this diner's at. And she said, we have things happen here all the time, like footsteps coming out of nowhere, lights turning themselves off or on, lay something down, it disappears, and then you go back an hour later and it's right where you left it after you spent an hour or two looking for it, you know, stuff like that. And she said, it's just, you know, a lot of weird stuff. And they're talking about this, and all of a sudden they're not aware of the person coming up. Suddenly there's another person standing there, and the person was a man, and he says, you know, there was a young girl about 12 to 14 years old who died right out front here. No, wasn't there? And the waitress looked at him a little startled, and the guy was like, I couldn't tell you where he came from. He just was there. And she said, there was. And he said, and don't forget about Lenny. He was killed right out there too. And she's like, yeah. And she looks at the guy she was originally talking to. And she says, there was a little girl about 10 years ago who was walking home, and she ran into traffic and got killed. And then our dishwasher, that was Lenny. He was struck crossing the road one night after work. People said they didn't see him in the darkness. There's a lot of stories like that. And she looks back at the other guy that kind of interrupted the conversation, and she goes, how did you know that? And he's like, oh, I've heard about them. And she says something, turns to say something to the other guy. He was, you know, he's like, hey, I'm just going to go ahead and finish my dinner, kind of trying to get this, it's getting awkward now, trying to get this whole thing to go away. And they look back, and the fella is gone. And so the gentleman said, I asked for my check, and I said, I don't think I'll be eating here again.
Well, unless you're crossing the road, it was just a...
But they were seen right outside the place on the highway. And so these are actually customers who have seen them, and the staff.
But no actual harm, unless you're one of the people trying to cross the road and don't make it.
Yeah, no, I mean, but it was interesting, you know, who was it? Was this Lenny? Was it another person who had died on the road? Where did God come from? How did he know so much? You know, why was he making a point of telling those particular stories and not others? There was a good dozen people in total. Just interesting.
Agreed.
So this is, next one's about a truck stop. It is on Route 66. There's a place called called Villa Ridge, and the truck stop itself is supposed to be haunted. And I wouldn't have added this story except for the reason it's haunted. So a lot of, you know, there's this huge industry now in ghost hunting and tourism and what have you. So this old abandoned truck stop had a reputation for being haunted. And somebody got the bright idea to buy it and turn it into a place where ghost hunters could pay to go ghost hunting. Kind of a deal, right?
This isn't going to end.
Well, and then it's a weird story. So over the course of time, they've brought in multiple mediums. And I'm not a big fan of them, even though I think people have spidey senses, but I don't trust people who do it for a living, because then there's a pressure on to always provide something. And nobody's that good. I don't care who you are, nobody's that good. I've known a lot of really decent mediums and psychics and what have you who are decent people, and they didn't charge and they just did it out of concern for the people and what have you, and they're not that good. I'm not that good. Nobody's that good. So anyhow, what I found interesting was that on multiple occasions, people came in with sensitives who didn't know each other from different areas because you're renting. So like you have people coming from near and far and all over, and they bring their own staff and what have you with them when they come. But here's the thing that was interesting. All of these women or men who came, the psychic mediums, all said the same thing. The truck stop is a portal to the other side of eternity. People are coming and going here. These are where souls of truck drivers that have died re-enter. They come back to the truck stop, and they try to attach to the truck drivers who would come in and take possession of their bodies so that the truck, they could drive themselves back home to wherever their home was one more time.
Wow.
I thought that was creepy. Now, if I were picking theories and I was a guesser, that wouldn't have been my guess. And that wouldn't have been my guess for like 12 or 15 people that walked through it in about a 5-year period. Truck drivers' spirits returned to the old truck stop they used to go to, and there they were looking for drivers that they could step into to go home.
So you knew it wasn't going to end well.
I just thought that was a really interesting story.
What is it? You know, and what do you do with the poor truck driver whose body's taken over? You know, that's...
Yeah, can you imagine that? I mean, like, think about that. Yeah, it just, you know, you're driving along, you're sitting there having dinner, which is what was happening. That's why the place had a reputation for being haunted. Then the next thing, you know, you're sitting in some strange town and you've like not made your time on your load, you know, to dump your load and pick up a new one and turn around because that's how you make your money. And you can't explain to your boss how you ended up in Joplin, Missouri when you should have been in San Francisco. Imagine that conversation. So I found it a really interesting story. The next one is Bloody Bride Bridge, which I thought was a really interesting story. And it comes down to, there's about three different versions of this story. But supposedly there's a young woman who, her name was Minnie Warren, and she was engaged to a fellow by the name of Jack Billings. And they were on their way home from a party. This is the original story, the first story, at least the first one I could trace. They were on their way home from a party, waiting for them on the bridge was this person. And, you know, in the mid-1800s, it was nothing for you to have to walk several miles to go home or what have you. So nobody thought anything of this guy kind of loitering on the bridge, but the guy had a knife or an axe, depending on who's telling the tale. And they realize when they get closer that it's a fellow they know, Bill Jones. And he had tried to date Minnie, and she had gone on one date with him, didn't like him. He seemed kind of brutish. So she had moved on to Jack Billings. And so Bill Jones is sitting there, you know, standing there waiting for them to come up across the bridge. They kind of go up across the bridge, and as they're walking across the bridge, he attacks and he kills them. And so that's why it's known as Bloody Bridge or Bloody Bride Bridge, because there are some stories that they were coming home from their wedding party, others just that it was a party. And you will hear that they're seen on the bridge. You'll hear her screaming. You'll hear the fighting. People have seen them on the bridge. You know, so you can imagine you're driving home from work one night. It's 10 o'clock at night. You're crossing the bridge, and out of nowhere, this whole tableau comes and reenacts itself, and you slam on the brakes. What the heck's going on? And there it is. And then later on, there's actually a plaque. It looks like a tombstone, but off to the side, not too far from the bridge itself, that tells this story. And it's, you know, had a reputation for quite a long time. There's also stories that that there's a girl seen running along the towpath along the edge of the bridge. And there's some speculation that it was Minnie trying to get away. So again, you know, you're driving along and this girl comes flying out of nowhere in 1800s clothes, and it's just horrible. And I have to tell you, I'm going to read you what's exactly on the Bloody Bridge sign or monument. It says, during the canal years of the 1850s, a rivalry grew between Bill Jones and Jack Billings for the love of Minnie Warren. This became hatred by Bill because Minnie chose Jack. On the fall night of in 1854, returning from a party, Minnie and Jack were surprised on the bridge by Bill. Armed with an axe, with one swing, Bill severed Jack's head. Seeing that this, Minnie screamed and fell from the bridge into the watery grave. Bill disappeared, and when a skeleton was found years later in a nearby well, people asked if it was suicide or justice. This was erected by the, I'm gonna hopefully I say it right, Ogdsell County Historical Society in 1976. This is a historical event.
One of those blue signs with the yellow borders. Yeah.
No, this looks like a tombstone. It's like
Oh, yeah,
a
that.
granite sign, and it's engraved like you would see a tombstone.
Okay, not like those historical markers you see all over the place that are the, you know, okay. They have
No,
those.
because those are wildly inaccurate quite often. And I don't take a whole lot of I don't do a lot of believing in them. Like, they're a good place to start research, but I wouldn't end it there.
Fair enough.
Because a lot of them are bought and paid for by local historical societies or societies, associations, even families. You know, Sons of the Confederacy, Daughters of the Confederacy, you know, New England, Quaker Ma, there's all kinds of groups, and they will pay for signs. They'll donate the money for the sign, but the sign has to be altered a little bit to make it advantageous to them so that they will pay for the sign. And that's happened more times than I could possibly imagine. Here in Pennsylvania, a great many of our signs were written by a guy named Pynchon, who was a part of the government, state government at the time. And they definitely, and I like his writing. He wrote several books, and they're really interesting, but you do have to do a lot of research because he tended to embroider immensely to make them more romantic or larger than life in some way.
Poetic license. Yeah.
Indeed, if that's the case, he had a lot of them.
Best news that money can buy.
Amen. So, you know, I don't always necessarily believe that stuff, but it was a but I thought that story was interesting because these people went to the local historical society, went to the trouble of actually, I mean, that's expensive to put a granite, you know, tombstone kind of marker there and have it completely engraved. That's got to be several thousand dollars. And they have the historical documents to back it up. It's just really bizarre. And this next one is, I'm going to do two more. This one is kind of just a cool hitchhiker type story. So there's a story in on route on Highway 5 north of Jasper, Alabama, where story goes that there was a teenage girl who was walking home late one night after an argument with her boyfriend. He dumped her out, you know, she's like, let me out of the car. Let me out of the car. Nothing ever happens that's good, ladies. If you get mad at night and you make your boyfriend slash husband slash best friend, whoever it is, let you out of a car in the middle of nowhere. I promise you, nothing good will happen. Keep your mouth shut, hold your panties on, and just get home. And then you can be mad at him. Because I must have 100 of these stories. But anyhow, the story goes like this. So she's mad. She gets in a fight with her boyfriend. She's like, let me out of the car. He does what he thinks is the right thing because she's screaming, pulls over. He lets her out of the car, figures she'll cool off by morning. It's only a mile or two to home. She'll walk it off, and then tomorrow he'll approach her again. Unfortunately for him, after he leaves her, she's hit by a rig. Guy coming down the road driving. He didn't see her in time, and he hit her. That was, and now, supposedly, she if trucks are driving down through there, rigs are driving down through that area, she'll suddenly appear in the passenger seat, as if still. And the story is that she was still looking for the man who killed her. He was never brought to justice. So I thought it was an interesting story. There's literally so many of these, but the last story I'm going to tell tonight, and it is ironic, because right now there's a lot of craziness going on in New York City from one end to the other, politically, socially, criminally, every way. And a week ago, before all the craziness got out of hand, or we knew it got out of hand, or however you want to look at that, I found this story. I would like to read it to you. It says, evil lurks in the streets of New York City, the city that never sleeps. So this guy writes this, who's writing this, is a truck driver. He said, I was a transfer driver, and I went to New York City to deliver a truck with a convoy. As we drove the streets of New York City, I began to see little creatures climbing all over the trucks, trying to get into them. They were about 18 inches tall and solid black. There were hundreds of them crawling all over the trucks in the convoy. The closest thing I could think of to compare them to was the movie Ghost, where all the little black demons would take the bad guys to hell. I was frightened out of my mind. I always knew New York City was evil, but the only thing I could think of is this. The evil in this town manifests itself after dark. That's what kept going through my head. I wasn't drinking, I don't do drugs, and I wasn't tired. I had and have no explanation for what I saw on that night, but I refused to drive in New York ever again. I have to tell you, I've heard other stories of people seeing stuff like that. I mean, that's where the concept of that, I've even told stories about this amorphous, like, mass of blackness that envelops people and drags them away. I've talked about this in multiple podcasts over the years, including people I know who've had experiences of witnessing such things. And whatever was there, he saw it. He believes he saw it. And so much so that he's willing to back it up. It's quite a terrifying story, isn't it?
Very frightening. Yeah. I never liked New York City anyway. I mean, And if we have listeners from New York City, you know,
apologies.
Yes, apologies in advance. But I just never really liked a city that large. It's just, I'm more comfortable in the sticks.
And I know, and I get that. I'm exactly, well, you know, I'm that way. I mean, it's just who I am. I'm not comfortable in any city at all, but I've been to New York City one time. I was like, I got to the Tappan Zee Bridge and I remember panicking. And my best friend said to me, why? And I said, there's no trees. And she said, what? I'm like, there's no trees. I could just feel like I felt like I was suffocating and I refused to go across the bridge. And she's like, are you sure? And I'm like, take a different route. Just take a different route. I don't want to be there. And I'm a country bumpkin. I'm totally good with being a country bumpkin. I'm fine. I get there's people that would be just as unnerved about being in the woods as I am about cities. Except I feel a lot safer with the bears. They got rules. I don't attack them. I don't put food out where they can get to it. Things like that. I'm good. I've never like, I don't like cities in general. I just think that and I have no hatred for people in cities. I stayed in Pittsburgh for weeks and weeks and weeks when my mom had her accident and she was in intensive care. And I had met nothing but nice people. I don't in Pittsburgh. I don't want to say that I don't like cities because the people are bad. That's not true. I think there's really good people in those cities. I just think there's something intrinsically dark in them as well.
More places to hide.
Yeah, and like, okay, you can have 100 really nice people, but only need one really bad one. And it's unnerving I can't imagine anybody would be not unnerved by, like when my mother was out there, I was told, don't get out of the car, park in the parking garage, call for one of the security guards, they'll walk you in. That tells you right there that there's a problem. Like you need a guard to walk from your car to my mom's hospital room. So there's just a lot of negativity. Anyway, you look at it. Good people, again, good people. I don't mean in any respect to insinuate there's not good people in New York, not good people in Philadelphia, Pittsburgh. I know there's good people. And I'm truly sorry I don't want to offend you in any way. I just know there's a negativity that goes with the bad ones, and you're stuck with it too. And it swallows, you know, just swallows it up. And it takes one bad person to hurt a lot of good people.
Yeah, so but what were the little black things? What the heck were they?
Well, I mean, I've heard stories of these demonic things that drag people's spirits away. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, like, we've heard angel stories where an angel comes or a family member comes or something and says, you know, come on, cross over, come through the tunnel of light, blah, blah, blah. But I've heard these dark stories before. I told this story several times, and I apologize. But about a friend of mine who in the 60s stayed in an apartment, did drugs, and saw that massive black thing with all these tendrils pulling at this person who looked a lot like the guy that he was, that lived in the apartment, but a lot older than him. And it turned out that this apartment had belonged to the older brother. He had committed accident. I don't think suicide, I guess it was an accidental overdose. Mm-hmm. And died. And because the family had paid the rent on the apartment for a year, they allowed him to eventually move in.
Ooh.
And my friend didn't know any of this stuff. This was like an acquaintance friend type situation. And so he did LSD in the apartment, which he put it to me in the 60s. LSD was like today, asking you if you want a cup of coffee when you come to my house. And during that time, while he was going through that trip, he saw this massive thing, these black tendrils pulling and this boy screaming, you know, don't let it take me, don't let it take me, please help me, please help me. It was terrifying. He was just completely overwhelmed with fear. When he comes out of it, he tells his friend, and his friend looks at him like he's crazy. And then he goes back and gets a photo album. He shows it to him and he says, the person you saw, was he in this book? And he flips through and he very quickly finds this person, and he's like, this is him. And he says, this is my brother who died here. And he tells him the story. And he said, after that, I was like, no more drugs. Whatever they do, no more drugs. So I think that allowed me to see what happened to that boy, and I don't ever want to see that again. But I thought it was an interesting story, particularly to find it at this moment in time. But it's a creepy story any way you look at it. And with that, I am done, my dear.
Alrighty. Well, thank you very much for the stories. And again, thanks for sticking with us, folks. And good night.
Good night.